This week on Retronauts, we've got more cows in the Far Side collection. Hey everybody, this is Bob Mackey for Retronauts episode 14. Today's topic is Harvest Moon, the Harvest Moon series, in fact. And let me introduce my panel for today. First of all, who is Skyping in with us?
It's-a-me, Jeremy.
And Jeremy thinks we're talking about a different series, but learn a little bit more about Harvest Moon. As we go.
Harvest Moon
the guy still has a hat, Jeremy, so you're not completely wrong.
Harvest Moon isn't one of those levels in Mario Kart? The one with the cows and the little moles that pop up in the road. I'm confused.
Actually, those cows are skirting the lines of copyright. But let's go on to our next Retronauts panelist. Who's right here?
Ray Barnholtz, right here.
And what do you do, Ray? Who are you? What form do you take?
I'm an editor site type of guy at moregaming.net. But cool. I do stuff around here too. I'm on Retronauts.
And we also have another guest who paid not only to be here, but he's also paying for this episode. Who do we have right here in front of me today?
Adam Fitch. I actually work in Natsume right now. I've been there for 6 years. I do the localization and QA testing there, and I've been doing that for about 6 years. And yes, I paid an inordinate sum of money to be on this podcast, which... resulted in an interesting conversation with my girlfriend once she found out.
I gotta say, no refunds, Adam. In case this doesn't turn out.
You paid for Harvest Moon, and you also get paid for Harvest Moon.
Yeah, just say this is an effort to keep your job, right, or at least to extend it.
We discussed this. This was during the Kickstarter campaign,
so. Right? And Adam, did we say where you work yet?
Yeah, I work at Natsume.
Okay, cool. I wasn't sure if we got to that. Yeah. So yeah, today we're going to be talking about the Harvest Moon series, which is great because I'm a fan of it, and it's something I wanted to do at our other site, but I never got around to doing an episode about it. So here we are today talking about Harvest Moon, everyone. And I just wanted to sort of give a brief overview of what it is. And essentially, if you've never played a Harvest Moon game before, this podcast will be interesting. So don't turn us off, because it's a really cool series. And I'm sure there's at least one game in it that you will enjoy playing for yourself.
But if you've listened to the wrestling episode, then maybe you can make it through this one.
Yes. Please hang in there, guys. But I mean, I think it's a really good topic, because this is a very sort of interesting game in that it's a premise you don't see that often. At least you didn't see... until the whole like Facebook and mobile game explosion.
Right.
But this was before that, and Harvest Moon is basically SimCity on a much smaller scale, in that you're tasked with running a farm and you have to manage your time as well as your resources. Unlike, in SimCity, you're not this immortal god king who rules for centuries and, shapes the land.
You don't actually know that. At no point have they ever said that you are not immortal in Harvest Moon. For all you know, you are some kind of deity living
in the game, so...
See, there you go.
That is true.
I
guess
you are an immortal god king, just of a very, very tiny domain.
I guess in Harvest Moon, you do assume human form, though, which is different than SimCity. I assume you're some kind of sentient cloud mayor that just like floats around and burns things to the ground.
SimCity is sort of the Judeo-Christian approach to God, where it's vast and all-encompassing, whereas Harvest Moon is more like you're an animistic god. You're the local deity of the village.
Yeah, I would agree with that, actually.
That's true, and in fact,
I'm just
the religion,
pulling that out of my ass.
If you call it, no, I'm serious. That's actually a good point, because like the religion in the game is very animistic. How do we say that?
Adjective? Yeah, animistic.
Yes, animistic.
Well, it's Shinto-ish.
Yeah, it is. Even though there's a like literally a Christian style church, but we'll talk more about that later. We're getting a little sidetracked, but yeah, basically the point of Harvest Moon is you are tasked with running a farm and all of the associated tasks that go along with that, like growing crops, fishing, mining, cooking. There are many ways to make money, but the point is to make money and keep the farm afloat. But it's not just for cold hard cash that you're running this farm. It's not just for the fruits of capitalism.
Yeah, not just the pure drudgery.
Yeah. Really the point of this game is to develop relationships with people around you. And that was sort of the core idea that Yasuhiro Wada had, the creator of the series, when he first thought up the idea. He's like, I want to make this this series where you take care of animals, make connections to people. The farming thing was not even like the first idea he had, which is pretty surprising, actually. So yeah, like for the medium, Harvest Moon offers like a completely nonviolent experience with a focus on friendship and giving, which feels like the antithesis of the video game premise. You know,
right?
It's not about revenge.
No,
it's not about God help me out. I think like all video games have to be about revenge, right?
Or rescuing a princess.
Right. Pretty much, yeah, yeah. And we'll talk more about like
saving the
stuff,
world.
But this game, yeah, and this game is a very friendly, happy go lucky game where nothing really dies except for fish, maybe.
Well, your animals can die.
They can die.
After old age or if you don't feed them.
That's true. But you're not blasting them apart with like a shotgun.
No. No,
which
no.
which is the main difference here. So
you can't run them over.
So Bob,
no.
Bob is Rune Factory outside the scope of this podcast, because that is kind of Harvest Moon, you know, meets gamers halfway.
Right. I will be talking about Rune Factory later when we talk about sort of what Harvest Moon hath wrought. But for now, we're going to just be talking about the overview. But actually, Rune Factory 4, to jump ahead a little bit, is one of my favorite Harvest Moon games, even though it's not a traditional Harvest Moon game. But we will talk more about that later. So we could talk a little bit about the series creator, Yasuhiro Wada. I mean, Adam, can you tell us anything about the guy? I've met him. I've interviewed him a few times.
I have too.
I assume you've often worked with him or have been around him for some prolonged period of time, just, you know, with your job. Can you tell us anything about the guy?
Well, he's kind of like the character in the game. He's actually from a small town as well. I don't know how many people are familiar with the geography of Japan, but he's from a small town in Kyushu, and he told a story about when he went to like the biggest city in his prefecture, and he was just amazed at like the shopping malls, and this is like still a pretty small town. And so then when he moved to Tokyo for like getting a job, he was just blown out of his mind by how many people there are in Tokyo and then that kind of thing. So that he does say that was an inspiration for his game. He's very he's a really nice guy. He's pretty soft-spoken, you know, like most Japanese developers.
He seems extraordinarily, I mean, I guess you always have a sort of reserve quality when you're interviewing a Japanese developer, just because it's more of a cultural thing. They're not prone to giving you secrets. But whenever I talk to him, it feels like there's much more of a connection there. He feels like he's more honest, more open.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know.
I think so.
And he always talks about his hobbies and things like that, which I appreciate to hear from a developer. They are not their jobs. There's other things going on in their lives that sort of inform their work. And I do like to hear that.
Huge Beatles fan.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't know that. So this is, we're getting all your Wada facts for today.
I never met the guy, but when you talk about him visiting Tokyo for the first time, I see like a dude in overalls with like a piece of straw hanging or wheat hanging out of his mouth saying, "Well, golly." Is that anywhere close?
It probably wasn't far off.
He did get into Tokyo by falling off of a truck, as far as I know. Okay, so a little bit more about Wada. From what I read online, he seemed to have come up in the industry through a contractor called Pack-In Video.
Yes.
Which is a contractor that worked on a number of games, usually in secret. And in our past episode, we learned that they probably most likely worked on Friday the 13th by being contracted through Atlas or something. I don't know. It's strange and arcane, but that's what Pack-In Video is. Do you have any more information about that, Adam? Just like who they are?
So you happen to know how... Do you happen to know when he started with Pack-In Video?
God, it had to have been around, probably around 94, 95, 96, I would think.
Oh, okay, so he was a later arrival. Because Pack-In Video was responsible for the NES Rambo game, and it would be amazing if he had started his career with Rambo, only to go on to create Harvest Moon, but oh well, no kismet there.
We can ask him about that. I'm not even kidding. I can ask him about that. But so Pack-In Video was actually acquired, I think during this time, by Victor Entertainment, mm-hmm. which is actually a subsidiary of JVC.
Yeah.
JVC used to be in the video game publishing business.
Right. And they were the original Japanese publisher of Harvest Moon.
Yes. Victor Entertainment.
Yeah.
So, that was the the first Harvest Moon game was published by, it was developed by Pack and Video, and published by Victor Entertainment, and yeah, I guess it was a modest success in Japan, and I guess this is how Natsume comes into it. Our boss, I guess, I think he's told the story several times to us, so the facts might be a little, and he was drunk at the time, I think. So.
Who's your boss?
No, I'm like,
no, who is, no, what's his name?
His name is Hiro. He had actually just gotten into the video game industry after he had been working in the golfing industry, golf club industry, selling Japanese style golf clubs. And they actually he got a job somehow at Natsume, and they actually sent him to the American office to kind of shut it down.
Right.
And he's like, well, I'm gonna, you know, just try and, you know, figure out, you know, if I can get some good games to sell. And he came across, this must have been at a TGS or something. And I wonder if it was, because my boss, Hiro, is also from a very small town in Kyushu called Kagoshima. So I wonder if that kind of inspired him to do it, because he saw this, like, farming game. And apparently, like, all of the... Everyone he talked to said, don't publish this game. This game is not good. Because if you think about the time,
yeah,
this was around early 97, I believe it was published. This is before, like, Square had published Final Fantasy VII, I believe. It was before the kind of big
right, the Japan... Japanese release was August 96, and it came out here in August 97.
So, right, yeah, it was really the twilight years.
Barely before Final Fantasy VII, right. Like days before Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah.
Yeah, was it? And really, everybody was sort of jumping ship from the Super NES because it wasn't
right. But I think it was not at the time where Japanese stuff was like hip or cool or what have you. So for him to take a risk on this kind of game was pretty big.
Yeah.
And it ended up selling. I don't think I can go into exact numbers here, but it sold a decent amount. For that time, and I you know, I remember renting the game from like the local Blockbuster at the time, you know, like 97. I don't even know what possessed me to rent it, because yeah, like you say, farming simulation. I mean, I was really into Japanese stuff at the time, and
it was the ghost of Employer's Future. It possessed you.
The ghost of Employer's Future. And I took a look at it, and I was like, well, this seems kind of interesting. And then I started playing it, and like, there's different girls you can talk to, and I'm like, hey, that's kind of cool, because I'm into like dating sims now, so like I think it's always been something that has been an interest to me. So I think the fact that like if the game itself isn't just a farm, like Bob says, it's not just farming, or like an actual farming simulation would be kind of boring, but he threw some like kind of cool stuff in there.
Yeah, and I mean, there was Sim Farm before this. One of the many like even think Maxis developed it. I'm sorry if I'm just jumping in off the cuff here, but I think it was sort of like Sim Life, where it was just like, let's put the word Sim on something that
right,
we don't know.
Sim Ant,
but
and stuff, yeah.
But I think Sim Farm was the boring version of farming in right. this case.
Yeah, it was more kiddie. Yeah.
I remember when the Super NES game came out, and I remember seeing the tag for it at Toys R Us and thinking, wow, this is crazy. Someone's releasing a Super NES game now, and it looked really intriguing. But you know, I was up to my neck in PlayStation games at that point, and I just couldn't bring myself to spend $70 on a Super NES game, even though. You know, like, mm-hmm. it just looks so different and so unique that it was that in a, what was it called? The ship rescue game, like the Titanic game, Serpentarian or whatever. Was that SOS?
SOS.
Yes, I saw that around the same time, too, and was like, these look really cool, but I can't spend this much money on a video game. I was already spoiled by $40, $50 PS1 games. It's very tragic.
Well, you bring up You bring up a good point, Jeremy. A lot of our younger listeners might not know, but video cartridge-based video games were really expensive by the end. They were like I remember going to, like you say, and paying like a ridiculous amount of money for like an RPG. And this kind of stuff, this game has like kind of the whole, I don't know about the first one, but the most recent ones have the kind of text amount of an RPG. Like, it's insane how many different conversations and like different combinations you can trigger and stuff like that. So, yeah, for something selling, like you said, at a price point of $70 to do as well as it did when there was the PlayStation 1 launching at the same time, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, the N64 was I literally don't know how it happened. And I think a lot of Nintendo fans had already jumped ship. But at the same time, I think, you know, there were still a lot of maybe younger gamers, people who had gotten hand-me-down systems, and they didn't have much in the new way of new content at that point. So, you know, I could see where, given the market penetration of the Super NES and how widespread the popularity of that system was, that there would still be that kind of, like, last few remnants that could eke out a little bit of cash based on that sort of dwindling but still interested audience.
Yeah, this was also the same year they introduced the redesigned Super NES for like, you know, $70 or $80.
Yeah. So you do have that point, yeah.
So they could take advantage of that too.
Yeah. So also, for the cost,
from my perspective, I remember first hearing about the game in Nintendo Power, and you know they did do a pretty decent feature on it, and that I think really helped, you know, get exposure.
I think that's where I saw it too. Right. Along with Earthbound, they were sort of like pushing these games that were kind of strange, but they still wanted to show you like what they were and why you shouldn't be afraid of them.
Right. I would like I would like to imagine that, you know, someone on Nintendo Power staff was, you know, cognizant of the fact that this was a unique game and kind of wanted to feature it.
Yeah. Well, just a few more things before we get into individual game discussion. Harvest Moon was sort of way ahead of its time in that it's a very gender-neutral game, and that means sort of it's not really a power fantasy for men or women exclusively. And there would be later games. It didn't take long for the game to have a playable female character along with your male character, but Wada gave me a quote when I interviewed him a while ago, and he told me, Harvest Moon doesn't dumb anything down for either gender. If you play as the guy, it's not like all of a sudden you're this big buff dude and you get all the best equipment. And if you play as a female, you're not this busty looking character. So he sort of wanted to have like the equivalent experience, you know, both for men and women who are playing the game. Or, you know, for a person playing the game, maybe I want to play as a girl. Maybe I want to see what that perspective is like. I mean, there it's pretty much like in this world, it's really egalitarian. You can be a woman who owns a farm, takes care of livestock, etc.
I mean, speaking of that, like we have a huge female fan base.
I bet, yeah.
Huge female fan base.
Of course.
Yeah, I would guess that like the female fan base is much larger than the male fan base at this point for Harvest Moon.
It's hard to say because they're definitely the most vocal, but you know what I mean? Like our main fan site, like everyone who posts on there, like because I take a look at it from time to time, I assume they are female unless they state they are male just because of the kind of, you know, like just the kind of game it's become, like they like, you know, go, you know, trying to date the different characters and stuff like that. So
And just one more thing I want to note before we talk about the individual games, Harvest Moon wasn't really the first real life simulator, and I think that honor goes to Little Computer People, which is always cited.
I've
as
played
like
that game.
Little Computer People,
yes.
It's actually, isn't it just more, is it more of like a toy than it is an actual game? That's what it always seemed like to me based on what I've read about it. Maybe Jeremy knows a little more about this. I'm not sure if anyone else has played it.
Yeah, I mean, it really was more like an ant farm or an aquarium or something. You kind of watched it and you could poke around a little bit, but you didn't really play it. But, you know, around the same time there was, what the hell was that game with the really creepy looking things? That, like
Creatures?
Was that it?
Creatures.
There was Creatures, yeah. Okay, Creatures. And, you know, actually, Squaresoft had a Famicom Disk System game called Appletown Monogatari in the mid to late 80s. Was that the Japanese version of Little Computer People?
Yeah.
Okay, so they licensed it and changed the name?
Yeah. Right.
Made it cutesy, gave it an apple?
Mm-hmm. So I guess what we're getting at is Harvest Moon wasn't the first real life simulator, but it was the first one that was more than just a toy. There is a vision or goal in mind for the player, and there's much more of an emphasis placed on like scheduling and planning and efficiency, right, and like the economy of everything. Like, yeah, what am I going to get done in this amount of time today? Yeah. And trying to plan it out for the future. And in a way, it feels like this is the sort of like eat your vegetables type of game where it's a lot of hard work, often tedious work, but it all pays off. It's all good for you. And it's supposed to be very fulfilling, you know, just these incremental like rewards you get along the way.
You know, it's weird. I've been playing the first one on Wii U Virtual Console for the past week or so, just kind of refamiliarize myself with some of the stuff. And it's kind of weird how... I think the reason this kind of game appeals to me more than something like Animal Crossing is because it's not done in real time. So you can kind of like you know, if nothing's happening for that day, go to sleep, you know, and something will happen the next day. And they're like, oh, if I can only get 500 gold, I can, you know, buy that packet of seeds. And if I can only get 1,000 gold, I can finally buy that chicken I've had my eye on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there's always, like, these goals that you're, you know, shooting for. But you can only do a certain amount in each given day. So it kind of tricks the player into playing longer than they kind of realize they are.
Right.
So...
And you also don't have animals that guilt trip you for not, you know, turning on your console for a day as you do in Animal Crossing.
No, they don't.
Your chickens don't wake you up and cluck angrily.
No.
Yeah.
Which is good. So yeah, let's get into things by talking about the first game, Harvest Moon. So Harvest Moon, like we said, came out for the Super Nintendo in Japan. It came out in August of 96. In America, came out in June of 97. Come on, that's so late for a Super Nintendo game. It's probably not the last Super Nintendo game. It might be not even in America.
No.
Do you know what that is offhand, anyone?
I believe it was had to be like Frogger or some shit.
Oh yeah, that's true. So yeah, like we all talked about earlier, at the time that like the very existence of this game was a joke, like. Even in reviews, they're like, okay, the very idea of this game is preposterous, but yeah. Most of the reviews were like, this is actually pretty fun, even though they were, you know, saying we had never seen anything like this before, especially on a console.
Right.
But the weirdness of Harvest Moon's premise really, I think combined with its late release date, I think that sort of had this like weirdness factor that would drew people in. I knew it drew me in. Like, okay, there's a Super Nintendo game. It's 1997.
Yeah.
My local video store is still renting Super Nintendo games for some reason. And there's a new one. What the hell? I like PlayStation, but I'll try this. So that's how I found it. And so it, basically in the game, your goal is to turn this farm that you inherit into a reliable business over the course of 2.5 years. And as we said before, Yasuhiro Wada, the creator of the series, he was behind the production and everything, and he was actually inspired by the Derby Stallion series of games.
That, yes.
Oh, go ahead, Adam.
No, you said exactly what I was going to.
Okay, I wasn't sure if you could talk. I don't really know anything about Derby Stallion.
Ray might know more. So it's Derby Stallion is like, it's one of those weird things you see in Famitsu, and you're like, what the heck is this? What is this like number one ranked game that people are looking forward to? And you're like, Derby. Oh, it's a horse racing game. But yeah.
It's a hat buying game.
But but the big thing was that it did have a lot of horse raising elements to it.
Yes.
And that's, you know, it was the original game to really do that instead of just racing, horse racing. So like that became a huge series, of course. And yeah, it really inspired a lot of different people.
Mm-hmm. And so basically, as we said before, there was no farming as the initial plan for Harvest Moon. Wada wanted this to be a game about raising animals, making connections with people. But then he noticed, he's a fan of RPGs, and he still is, and he noticed that sort of the battle system of RPGs is sort of the repetitive action that breaks up all the content that takes more time to produce and more thought to produce. So he thought, farming will be my battle system in this game.
Yeah. It kind of is.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, I mean, later in later games, your tools level up as you use them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The soil levels up, the seed. Yeah, it's just amazing, like how much this eventually turned into more of an RPG. So yeah, the development of this game is kind of a horror story, and as always, check Retronauts.com for this blog post for this episode, and I'll include a link to the story about this. But basically, the developer went under for Harvest Moon, and do we know who that was? Did they even have a name? I just assume it's an unknown contractor that he was working with.
I wonder, because there's two... I was even asking my boss about this, not Hero, but Graham, about... Because there's two names listed on the title screen. One of them is Pack and Video.
Right, and we know they live. They didn't close
fold. And the other one is like Azume
or something?
Yeah, something like that. So I'm wondering if it's connected to that in some way. I could be wrong. I asked Graham like on Friday. I was like, do you know who this is? And he didn't have a clue either. Yeah. So...
But apparently this contractor had their fingers in a lot of pies. They were developing a lot of different things, and they just went under, and the game wasn't finished. A lot of work had been done, but basically Iwata had to walk away from it, and he was about to quit, but in some sort of Disney-esque scenario, the writer and the main programmer approached him, and they were like, well, let's finish this game together. So they basically bought themselves 6 more months of time, and these three dudes, like, kicked ass.
I think one of them was a girl.
Oh, one of them was a girl? I thought one of them... Okay, cool. I thought they were all guys,
well,
but...
Well, it's like Tomomi or something.
Okay, I didn't get all the names, but for some reason there was a he involved in this, but okay. I guess, well, these three people...
It could be a guy, you know, okay. But I'm just...
We will do the research later. That's the Retronauts policy. So these three people basically kicked ass over the course of 3 months and finished the game themselves while throwing away most of the code that had been written because apparently it was kind of garbage.
I think that speaks to how they felt about it.
Yeah.
Apparently they all knew this was going to be unique as well. So
right,
they wanted to see it finished.
And thank God that Wada decided to, you know, finish the game because we would not have Harvest Moon otherwise. What else is there to say about Harvest Moon? It is a very, I mean, obviously this is the first game in the series, so it's a very basic approach.
It's very simple. Like if you going back, like one of the interesting things that, I mean, working for Natsume, whenever we come out with a new one, they're like, this just doesn't hook me the way the first one is. And I always like think to myself, like, have you played the original? Like, It's so basic and like kind of infuriating. I mean, obviously at the time it's kind of bare bones, but like, I mean, it doesn't really tell you like what to do in a lot of situations.
Yeah, in some senses that freedom is nice because it's much more of a sim that way. But another, if you don't know what you're doing, you can really screw yourself over in the first game.
You know, we here on Retronauts, we talk a lot about nostalgia, but we also want to keep it in check.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
This is kind of the problem that, you know, sequels suffer from, is that when you have a follow-up to a really groundbreaking, different kind of game, like, you can't recapture that sense of novelty and freshness that the original game had just because you're exploring the same territory, whereas the original game was doing something new and different. And that's just, you know, it's a function of nostalgia, it's a function of just how our brains work, but... Certainly Harvest Moon is not alone in this sense. And I think it's really kind of a testament to how unusual and different the original Harvest Moon was from anything else at the time that people can play an improved version and say, oh yeah, but you know, this doesn't hit me the same way that the original did, even though the original was very bare bones and lacked a lot of kind of in-game tool tips and just kind of basic design smoothness that we've come to expect from
interesting
games.
Text.
Yeah.
Interesting translations.
Yes. We will get to that. just want to go over some of the limitations that would be eventually phased out, because I think other Harvest Moon games eventually were like, we need to give you something to do at all times, and we need to think of a way to make the busy work less tedious that you have to do daily. But in this game, you can only farm in the spring and the summer, which is very strange for Harvest Moon. In later games, they would always give you something to grow, regardless of the season. By the way, the seasons are broken up into 30 days, right, at a time. Yes. And it's maybe like 10-15 minutes a day that you actually play.
I mean, for me, it always depends on, like, if I'm done for the day, I'm going to bed.
Right. But in this game, at least, you can stay out past midnight and the day will never end. And you can pretty much abuse that to do a lot of things and keep healing yourself at the hot springs to get your stamina back.
Oh, yes.
But some more things this game introduces are the various archetypes for the various possible Harvest Moon wives. And later, there will be husbands as well. So we have basically the bookworm, the ditz, the tomboy, the lush, and the animal lover. And those are sort of like the those are like the five main stereotypes for the Harvest Moon ladies, usually that are reused. Yeah, there's sort of variants on them. Sorry, go ahead, Adam.
Oh, no, I was just going to say it's interesting because a lot of, I'll go into this more later, but some of the characters even kept the same name, like Nina, the girl, the girly girl you can go after. She appears in a later one, but she's like old and
okay.
Oh, she's old now. So
is there a Harvest Moon timeline we have to worry about?
You know, some
I hope not.
I'm not even kidding. Some people have tried to work it out, but
oh god,
I don't think there is. In my opinion, it's like the Zelda thing. It's a different. It's the same story, but told in a different way.
We're gonna get so many comments on this now. So yes, so we have that. I mean, was this the first? Was this the first like approach to anything close to a dating sim that we Americans had experience at this point in 1997? I mean,
At the same time, you had things like Thousand Arms on the PlayStation.
Right. I thought that was like 99, though.
I mean, yeah, okay.
I'm just trying to think if this was the first time.
Sorry, same-ish.
God, Ray, 2 years. Get out. You're banned. No. I'm just wondering if this is the first time we had seen anything like that. Because this is the first time I was like, you can like sort of give women gifts and they'll eventually start to like you.
It worked well in my actual dating life.
Did you just show up with cakes every time?
Sure.
I find
flowers.
That helps.
Hold it over my head. Give it to them.
Just don't throw the cakes too hard.
No. Yeah, I guess so.
Again, that was one of the things that attracted the game to me, though, because I was like, I can hit on chicks in this game. That's kind of cool.
Maybe not the same approach everyone took with that.
Yeah.
But it was something extra that, like you said, a lot of games didn't really have.
Yeah, like very few games had the hint or the idea of romance that weren't RPGs. And even then you couldn't control it. It was whoever was destined to love whoever else in this game's story. Okay, the biggest problem, we talked about this, a lot of the problems and flaws of this game can be excused based on the fact that this is the first time they've ever tried to do this sort of game before. So the game, unfortunately, features a lot of repetition. You can only handle so many days of brushing, feeding, and milking, and talking to the same 8 cows every morning before you go insane. Every animal you have to, well, I mean, for the cows at least, you have to talk to them, milk them, brush them, and... Am I missing something?
You can bring them outside.
You can bring them outside.
You have to like push them outside. It's like a whole different thing. Yeah.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of doing the same thing over and over. I mean, later games will fix this problem with something we'll talk about when we get to those games. But until then, Harvest Moon kind of got less fun as you took on more responsibilities. So it's kind of like real life in that way. Just like, I got 8 cows. I got to spend like 20 minutes taking care of these bastards now.
Yeah. Part of the allure, that realism.
Yeah. Oh god, taking care of cows, not as fun as advertised. So, pretty bad translation. Maybe Adam can talk about this. Adam, where were you in 1997?
Oh god, I was at Foothill Junior College.
Okay, well then,
majoring in Japanese.
That's your alibi. That's good. So, Adam, can you talk about the translation of this game? Because I find it hilarious and in a way that it was calling back to things maybe a decade, like localization standards from like a decade ago almost.
I don't know if I would go that far. See, you had companies like Square, and I would only go to far as to see Square because Enix's translations were still a little bit wonky then as well. When did Breath of Fire 2 come out? I mean, that was
95.
That was on a whole
another
level.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I don't know. Again, this game was released before my boss, Graham, and the only person left at Natsume who was around for this game was my boss, Hiro. So I have no idea about the translation.
Well, I'm not trying to point the finger. I'm just wondering, like...
I mean, my guess is how it always happens. Like, no context,
Give it to the cheapest possible entity, and then maybe
cheapest. I mean, I don't even know. It could have been translated by somebody's, cousin or something.
Right.
So
that counts.
Or it could have been translated, but never really localized. You know, part of the process, but not the editing, the smoothing. It's a two-step process.
It does read like a raw translation rather than, I mean, as someone who has done video game translations before, it feels like the stuff that you're given and asked to improve, the final product.
Well, I mean, a famous one is where you go and you check out your stove and it says, confirm the origin of fire. And I still don't know.
Prometheus, right?
Prometheus, yeah.
I still don't know what that means. I don't know what the original Japanese there was, but I'm certainly it wasn't that.
My stove often gives me trivia questions about fire.
Yeah.
It's one of those smart stoves.
Right. From the origin of fire.
Thanks, LG.
So moving on to Harvest Moon 64 for the Nintendo 64, came out in February 5th, 1999 in Japan, and November 30th, 1999 in the US. And I didn't play a lot of this game. I actually played the sort of kind of remake called Back to Nature. But we can talk about what this game added to the series. It added a lot, actually. The main idea feels a lot more fleshed out. And if I were to make a comparison, like Harvest Moon is Legend of Zelda, and Harvest Moon 64 is sort of a link to the past. It's all the things That's and elements hard. Had come together and were defined, and they would later be sort of the foundation of later games, more so than the first game was. The first game was just sort of an attempt at that idea. This game was a really more fleshed out, and I'm sure they had more money and more resources to work with. So, yes. So some changes to this game, and then Adam, I'll let you go ahead, and Ray and Jeremy, if you guys play this, let me know, because I haven't. Night no longer lasts forever, but the town has expanded. There's no more endless night. Sorry, guys. And there are many more time-sensitive events, and we also have this sort of tiered upgrade system that would eventually roll over into all the future games. So you upgrade all of your tools to, like, bronze, silver, gold, platinum, and Ori Halcum. Is that how you say it?
Ori Halcum. I'm not sure if it's in this game, but one of the translations was translated. It was Misurir, which was supposed to be Mithril.
Oh, okay.
But it was mistranslated as Mistral.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And when I got to Natsume, one of the first things I said to Graham, I said, "Hey, Graham, this is supposed to be Mithril. can I change this?" And he's like, "Sure." So
Mistral still sounds cool, though.
No.
But it's incorrect.
Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah, I mean, in Harvest Moon 1, you could only upgrade the tools once, I believe, and those were kind of through special events, like an earthquake would happen, and you'd find the magic elf cave, and they'd help you or something, I don't
know. Of course, as always.
Yeah, happy little elves.
happens in Iceland a lot.
Yeah, you're right.
That's where Björk came from.
Yeah.
She's a harvest sprite. So you can marry, but all the women in the game also have suitors who are after them as well. And
yes.
if you don't woo them in time, someone else will.
Yes, yes.
Oh, so damn. You can step up your game.
You can always, like, it's like, I don't like that guy. I'm just going to hand him garbage and watch him react. It's like, stay away from my woman.
Yeah.
And also another huge improvement, like so many improvements just to make the game easier to play. You can carry more than a few items at a time, which is gigantic. I believe in Harvest Moon 1, you could have one item in your pocket and one that you can just carry over your head, which was like, it would involve so much running back and forth.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. And now in games like Rune Factory 4, you can have like 7,000 things in your pocket, which is really nice. And another thing the game adds is slavery. Well, not really. It's not really slavery because it's a mutual agreement between you and Harvest Sprites. Where if you give them presents often, they will basically take care of things around the farm. And that sort of like basically puts your farm on autopilot. You do have to work your way up to befriending these things by constantly giving them presents. But once you sort of establish trust between you and them, they will basically do all of the grunt work while leaving you to sort of explore the more fun areas of the game, like socializing. So even with farming as the quote unquote battle system, there are still ways around it and still ways to cut that out of the game if you want to do that. But if not, you can still do all the tedious work. But I mainly use these guys to take care of my animals because that sort of was the most tedious part of the game. All the many steps you had to do to do that.
I think it still is.
Definitely. Localization, not super great. Better than Harvest Moon 1. And this one is notoriously buggy. In fact, that's the reason I've heard given that it was never released on a virtual console.
Yeah, we have. This is by far the game, the Harvest Moon game that people want on virtual console, and I can say behind the scenes, like, we've tried so many times to make it happen, but it doesn't look like it's possible.
That is a bummer.
So you mentioned the harvest sprites. There's actually interesting so in Japan they're actually called kurubukuru, not harvest sprites. And Kotobukuru is actually taken from an Ainu word, a Japanese Ainu word. Ainu is the original inhabitants of Japan. Mm-hmm. And the actual word is like Kotobukuru. And they're a race of small people in the folklore of Ainu people. So it's kind of interesting that they took something that was kind of native to Japan and called these things, you know, this tiny little people, you know, known in Ainu legend. And that doesn't really translate. So obviously, what are they? Harvest Brights.
They're basically the Seven Dwarves.
Yeah,
in their own way. I don't know the names of them in Japanese, but they're all basically named after their what do you call it? Their emotions, their moods, their personalities. Sorry, but they have kind of really boring names. Like one's name is Timid, one's name is like Staid. It's just like there wasn't a lot of. I'm sure if you're working on them, Adam, they would have been a little more creative. But they're pretty much straightforward like that.
And surly,
surly,
surly.
Listen, surly only digs fields for one guy.
What could surly. Fill a man's heart with neutrality?
So yes, anything else on Harvest Moon 64? Like I said, I never played it. Adam, Jeremy, anybody?
Okay, so this was kind of the first game that had like big festivals. Like the first one didn't have that many festivals. This had a cool. This is actually a really cool festival. Was the New Year's festival where your goal was to outdrink everybody?
Okay,
and I'm not even kidding. And if you don't, one of the girls you can woo, Karen, like she is like the town drunk, basically.
I always went after her, by the way.
So,
do you think she's named after Karen Allen, and it's a reference to the scene in Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, where Marion drinks the dude under the table? Do you think? Probably not.
Maybe, but you'd be surprised about you wouldn't be surprised about how much stuff Japanese developers kind of take sometimes from Western.
Let's tell our fans to add it to Wikipedia anyway.
Yes. That's a good idea.
It was on Retronauts. So anyway, yeah, that's our source.
Yeah. So anyway, that's one of the things you would have to do and the weird thing was, so how you won this festival was you had to go to the bar often enough and kind of build up your drinking tolerance.
Wow. Okay.
And so That was how you would win the festival, basically, is by, you know, becoming
a drunk. Hardening your liver.
Yeah.
Was it referred to as alcohol or wine or sake or whatever it was?
Because coffee.
No, it wasn't. I know in one of the games that Graham changed it to juice, but I don't think it was in this one. You can actually get drunk, and I mean, you like I said, you'll pass out. So.
Pass out, wake up next to a cow. What the hell happened last night?
Just more great realism for the series.
Yes, the real life of a farmer.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why it's so well remembered is because of the different additions to the festivals and making them more interactive. I mean, like, I think the flower festival in the first Harvest Moon is basically like, there's a flower festival today.
And people say different things, but nothing else has happened.
Right. Where this one, you could actually do different things, and they had different concerts. And the girl, and they, Harvest Moon 64 also introduced, like you said, the rivals, and a lot of them have been used in, like, more recent games in the series, like Cliff and Anne and like Gray. And so this was kind of the birth of kind of the fan fiction that would be written about the series, I suppose is the best way to put it. So it kind of was the birth of the characters that people would, because they kept bringing like the same people back, so you could kind of get you know, real feelings towards these characters, and so that was I think that's one of the reasons it's also popular.
Yeah, the characters had more to them. They had more to say. They had more personalities. People did get more attached to them, sometimes in uncomfortable ways. But let's move on to our next game. that game is Harvest Moon Back to Nature for the PlayStation. This game came out in December of 99 in Japan and November of 2000 in the United States. Again, Harvest Moon hitting those consoles much, much later than expected.
Yeah.
So we are well into the first months of PlayStation 2. But hey, here's a new PlayStation game. That happened a lot at the time.
Backwards compatible.
Yeah, dude. Get that smeary filter on there and you're good to go. Oh, $300 well spent.
It's not that bad.
I know. Could be worse. So like the original Harvest Moon, it has a pretty late release date, like I said. How is this different than Harvest Moon 64? It's not too different. They're sort of the same game, but it's more of a director's cut as far as I know. According to WADA, the team developing this version, and I don't know anything about this really, but they didn't receive any information about the characters, so they're different than their versions of Harvest Moon 64. So it's sort of like an alternate reality. At least that's how he considers it. I think they have different names. All the music is different, but it's the same kind of core idea is the same, like the same perspective. Adam, do you know anything about this, the differences between the two games? I couldn't really find too many.
I mean, for this, you were like kind of dealing with, like you said, alternate realities of the two different sets of characters. And like you said, it does kind of become like a kind of a fan fiction, somebody's different take on a character and somebody's... Was this the one with chicken sumo wrestling?
Yeah, it was. It was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, that's another thing. The that is like the most awesome thing in the world.
It
I
is,
think.
Yeah.
So I think like Harvest Moon 64, they tried to have festivals and events that, like I said, kind of took the player out of the monotony of the day-to-day life.
Just give you more to do.
Yeah.
For once. Yeah.
Because that is, I mean, I pushed for that hard in, like, you know, some of the later games. I was like, that is, you can't top that.
Yeah. Like, these games do best when there is a variety of things. And that's what Harvest Moon Back to Nature has to offer, because there's even more content than the 64 version.
Oh, I see.
So there's more events, more crops, a larger town, lots of little tweaks here and there. I'm sure a ton of bug fixes just because of the nature of the original game had some issues there.
Did it make any improvements to, like, the gameplay compared to that one? Or is it just, like...
I think now you can jump over rocks and things like that. I was reading just like little tiny tweaks.
Tell me more.
But it, like, that will save you time, because instead of, okay, stop, pick up the rock,
yeah,
put it away or throw it, you can just jump over it. So true. I mean, they were at least thinking like, how can we streamline this?
Yes,
but
course.
Like little tiny tweaks like that like improve the game, and I can't really speak to how much better this is than 64, because I didn't play 64.
Are there still harvest sprites?
There are still harvest sprites. Okay. Yes, this is the one I actually played the most. I played a ton of this game in those early PS2 days when there was nothing to play, so I was playing this like Dragon Quest 7 and like all the other late PlayStation 1 games
Dragon Quest 7.
Yeah, that were showing up at the time. So yeah, this is one of my favorites, and I really like the amount of freedom you're given, because you can basically just be like, I'm gonna be a hermit, never talk to anyone, and just work on my farm. You can do that if you want. The game lets you. But I mean, it does reward you for exploring the town. I just like sort of the I don't know, it gives this really great atmosphere that I'm not saying the other games are missing. I think this game just exudes it the best. Like, in winter, things are very lonely. Like, the seasons really feel like the seasons should. Speaking of someone that comes from a town with seasons, I enjoyed the Harvest Moon games for that reason. Because
where
it's just
from?
Like, Ohio.
Where in Ohio?
Northeast Ohio, Youngstown.
Youngstown.
Yeah. But, I mean, we did experience every season, so that doesn't happen here. So I sort of play Harvest Moon now to be like, oh, yeah, that's what winter's like. Okay.
Yeah,
I remember
that.
But, yeah, this one is my favorite. And, in fact, this is the game where they started allowing you to play as female characters, not in the original release, unfortunately.
That is correct. That is the female one was
it was just called Harvest Moon for Girl.
Well, that was the Japanese release. I don't know if the was there an American release of this?
I think there was, but much later, and it might have been only on PSP.
Well, see, here, that was the other thing. So in the early games, possibly, I'm going to say probably, to kind of optimize profits, they would have the boy version,
right,
and then they
right.
would have the girl version. Later games let you choose right off the bat if you want to be male or female. But yeah, unfortunately, in the early games, probably, you know, I mean, certainly for the, like, the Super Nintendo one, it's probably due to memory limitations and stuff like that.
It'd be interesting if that was actually the reason, sort of that weird Pokemon approach. Red and Blue, Boy and Girl. Yeah.
Well, right. We do have Pokemon X and Y. Yeah. So.
No trading, though.
One thing about the Back to Nature for Girl, Harvest Moon Back to Nature for Girl, which is the version where you play as a woman character, one thing about it that fans didn't like was the fact that if you're a woman in this game and you get married, the game is over.
Yeah.
Because your life as a woman ends at marriage.
Right.
No more working, period. Yeah. And Wada got a lot of feedback about this, and he changed that for future games. So yep. He's actually listening to his fans, which is great, because that's kind of crappy. Just like, yeah. I want to continue my life with my husband. It's like, no, stay inside. This game is over.
You're chained to the stove.
Yeah, really. We're moving on now to Harvest Moon Save the Homeland. And that came out for the PlayStation 2 in 2001 in Japan, and in winter 2001 for us. It was summer in Japan. So these games are getting a shorter amount of time between their releases, which is good. And Adam, tell us what the premise of this game is.
So this one is actually pretty unique in the series. So instead of, like, you get thrown in, like, you inherit the ranch from your grandfather, blah, 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 go talk to people. In this one, there's an evil company trying to, you know, eminent domain the land. Yeah. And,
so this is an 80s movie.
Yeah, like, you play as Ernest.
I don't know. It sounds kind of contemporary.
Yes, exactly, Ernest.
Is the company called Sun Manto or something? Is the company called Sun Manto?
No.
Or something along those lines.
Oh, God, I'm going to steal that. I'm going to steal that.
That's going to be in a future game, yes. Folks.
So it's so you live on an island, and they basically want to take over your entire village and raise it to the ground and build an amusement park. And the way you kind of, quote, unquote, you have a year to do this. Now, and this is also a unique Harvest Moon game in that you don't actually get married, and you can't get married in this game. I believe in a couple of the early Game Boy games you couldn't get married, but this, I think, especially on a PlayStation 2, is the only one where you can't get married. And your goal basically is to find some sort of it usually involves some sort of endangered wildlife, or like endangered butterfly or an endangered fish, so the government can declare it like, you know, a wildlife reserve. So
I see
the company can't actually take over your hometown. And so that game, there was kind of pseudo remake sequel for the PlayStation Portable called Harvest Moon Hero of Leaf Valley, where actually could get married, and there were a lot of, so it was kind of a remake retelling, and again you had the same type of thing. You had you had to kind of figure out a way to get the government to, you know, call off the evil corporation.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I wasn't a big fan of this game, and I was super on the Harvest Moon train at the time, and I have the little plushie I got for reserving this still, but this one, it was like much less of a focus on farming. The Sims sort of elements were kind of just paid lip service to, like, you were given a tiny plot of land, maybe like one or two animals, but really the game was all about like finding these like event flags and story flags and like unlocking the different endings. And it sort of reminded me of Majora's Mask in a way, in that you're given this limited amount of time to sort of play through over and over again.
Right,
you don't
die,
the world doesn't end. But when you beat the game, regardless of when it happens, I believe all of your crops and stuff are carried to the next game. So the game is really just about finding these endings, you know,
yes.
More than it is, you know, the joy of bringing up a farm or raising animals. It's more about like the narrative itself, which is new for a Harvest Moon game.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I can't speak for him, but I think that is what I think that's always been the direction he wanted to take it. Not in maybe, I mean, there's always sacrifices you make when you develop a game.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, you would want to do all, but, you know, you kind of have to entice the player, you know, and if they have, like, an unlimited time limit, like, they're not going to try to save the homeland. Yes. So, but I think the stories, I think he wanted to tell a little bit more complicated stories than they were being told in the first few Harvest Moon games, which was, I like you. I like you because you like flowers too.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. It never got that complicated.
No.
I wonder if that's just one of those things that were sort of brought up via the PlayStation 2, because you had a lot of, you know, that sort of hype behind it and how the emotion engine will change so many things. And I think a lot of developers were sort of like taking that hook, line, and sinker and decided to make more involved stories in their games. And I guess maybe that's what happened here a little bit. Maybe not consciously, but perhaps.
Well, the one trend it did follow was cel shading, and this game is cel shaded. Yes. It looks pretty good. And one thing I noticed is that the main character has a hat that says has the word toy on it.
Yes.
I don't know if that's predicting the eventual creation of Toybox Incorporated, which is Wada's new company. He formed with a few other people.
Are you saying he's a boy toy?
Oh, there's more to that backstory than we thought.
Yeah. Hey, I want to make a sidebar, actually.
Go for it.
You mentioned pre-ordering for a plushie.
Mm-hmm.
Adam, do you know if this was the first game where Natsume was giving away plush toys for pre-ordering Harvest Moon games? Because that became an expected thing. And I don't know what your guys' plush toy budget is now.
I've got a llama and a duck from the newest one.
It just made me think about that.
I'm not sure what the first one was, but yeah, it's certainly helps with pre-orders of games,
right?
So it's obviously enough. I mean, it works.
Yeah,
there's just a giant room at Natsume with just this overflowing with plush cows.
You
like,
joke.
Don't open the door.
You joke. You joke. But yeah, there's about half of our office is filled with like plush toys and stuff like
that. Have a few more games to go through here. We are now at Harvest Moon Friends of Mineral Town, or FOMT, for the Game Boy Advance. I made that up. No one calls it that. This game came out April 2003 in Japan and November 2003 for us in the United States. And in my opinion, this is really just an improved version of Harvest Moon Back to Nature. It really makes things a lot more efficient. It changes the viewpoint from isometric to sort of a Link to the Past-y looking, you know, not as viewed from like a 45-degree angle. Rather, and in my opinion, this is sort of the definitive version of this form of Harvest Moon, sort of the 80% sim, 20% story Harvest Moon that kind of was started from the beginning before it became something else. I don't know if you guys agree with me on that, but I did play a lot of this game.
Well, I think for me, at least, something like Harvest Moon, I think I always like playing the portable versions better,
right?
Because it you know, it's one of those games where you don't really need it on a big screen, and playing through something like, you know, like you said, Save the Homeland on a big TV. It kind of allows you to pick up and play a lot easier, and like you said, I mean, it brought back the Mineral Town, which was featured in Back to Nature, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like I said, it's kind of bringing back the characters and places that people remember. Oh, I remember this from this previous game, and it's kind of building a fandom around it.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed like even some of the text, a lot of the text was the same. I'm sure they might have carried that over from the you know, PlayStation version of the game, but I mean, the characters were the same. They had the same names. They were the same personalities. And in this one, you can even marry the Harvest Goddess.
Yes.
Although that takes a lot of work. I never did it. Yeah. She's sort of like a common figure in every game, the god of nature, basically.
Well, that was actually the start. In a few of the later games as well, you can marry some interesting things, like the witch princess. You can marry a cat.
I was gonna say the kappa.
Yeah, you can marry. I mean,
oh wow.
So it's I kind of like that kind of like, because they'd been mentioning the harvest goddess or the goddess of the harvest or whatever since the very very first one. So I think it's kind of interesting to actually allow you to marry her.
Yeah, that's got to be one weird home life, though.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, so this was the first Harvest Moon, and really the only Harvest Moon. I put any serious time into it, and I honestly didn't really enjoy it that much. Is there something wrong with me, Doctor?
Yes.
Well, what's wrong with me?
That was one of the characters.
There's a panel of three experts here. What's wrong with Jeremy?
I mean, I think this kind of game will appeal to somebody. I think, like you said earlier, it either appeals to you or it doesn't. And for me, like immediately, like I said in the first one, it appealed to me. And I mean, if you don't like giving like flowers to, you know, the same girl every day and holding it above your head and she's like, oh boy, I love flowers. Thank you very much. I mean, maybe it's not for you. Not every game is for everybody.
That's true.
That's very political of you. Yeah, I mean, I didn't think it was a bad game. It just seemed really, I don't know, there's something about the Game Boy Advance one specifically that seemed really dated. And I don't know exactly, it's hard to remember exactly what I said about it because it's been a very long time since I wrote that review. But it just, yeah, I don't know. There's something that seemed a little old-fashioned about it, and maybe it's because I played Animal Crossing before I played a Harvest Moon game, so I kind of came into that sort of a little, you know, much ado about nothing, slice of life, non-stressful kind of video game from a different angle than most people who like Harvest Moon.
That could be it.
See, I was the opposite. Like, I played Harvest Moon first, and then I remember both on GameCube and the New Leaf that was released. I keep trying to get Animal Crossing, and to me, like, the focusing on one day for me is like too much, I guess, for me at least. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I understand. I mean, I'm the same way in that I played Animal Crossing once, and that's all I ever need to play it because I've done the Animal Crossing experience. No matter what they add to it, every time my girlfriend's playing A New Leaf, and I watch her play, I'm like, I can't do that again. No, I want to, but I've already lost so much time to the Animal Crossing, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's not a bad game, but it just, like I said, I mean, you kind of, especially in the very beginning, you like run out of things to do for the day. You're like, well,
yeah,
that's I don't have a bug net. I
might as well go straighten things up somewhere in this patch of ground.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe that's why you didn't like Jeremy. It could be because you're a bad person. But
well, I think that's a given. I was just wondering if there was anything else.
Hmm.
I mean, you know what. It's possible because you said, like you said, the graphics, you weren't really wowed by them.
No, it's not that I wasn't wowed by the graphics. I didn't, you know, expect a Game Boy Advance game to make me say, holy crap, that's amazing. It was just more like the overall vibe of it. Just felt very kind of slow, and I don't know, maybe it's my own fault for playing it to review it and feeling like, oh, I need to accomplish something.
Right.
As opposed to playing it because I got nothing to do with my life. I might as well just, you know, spend a few months farming.
Well, like I said, I mean, around this time, I think, was when, like I said, the fangirls and fanboys started popping up and, like, creating huge backstories for Potpourri and Gray and all these.
Potpourri's dark past.
That is a character name, just for record.
Yeah. She's the light and bubbly one, so that was Ray's joke.
Ah.
Yeah, Gray is the reticent. How do you say that?
Reticent.
Yep. Yes,
the reticent like a farmer, so he basically pushes you away. So
is he the guy with like the coonskin cap, or
he's
thinking
the
someone
one
else?
That says he's the one.
Oh,
that
he's got the hat. Yeah,
the hat that says Uma on it, which means horse in Japanese.
Okay, right. Yeah.
So, yeah, he has a huge following among our female fans.
The Still Waters Run Deep type of
personality.
Yeah, hard to get.
You have to work at it, you know. And I think maybe that's one of the reasons why Jeremy didn't get it, is because maybe he wasn't familiar with the characters, and the people who liked it were kind of already familiar with the characters.
Yeah, I mean, I know I was. It was sort of like a way to see those characters again, but with a much better game attached. Not that the other game was bad, but this was much improved.
And then there was more Friends of Muehltown, which, like you said, was the girl version.
Yeah, that's right. And that was sold separately, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, but eventually that would be like choose boy or girl when you start the game. So moving on to our last game we're talking about today, and this is Harvest Moon, A Wonderful Life. Merry Christmas, you miserable movie house or whatever. I don't know. That came out for the GameCube.
How would the world be different if Harvest Moon had never existed? Let's see.
Yeah. I hope we never find out. But this came out for the GameCube September 03 in Japan and March 04 in the United States, and it came out for the PS2 at some point that I didn't look up. Mm. But Adam, I never played this game. At this point, I think... Save the Homeland kind of scared me away from the console Harvest Moons, and I've sort of dipped my toe into the water, and I kind of prefer it on a portable device now that it sort of now is a portable series.
Yeah.
Can you talk about what a Wonderful Life is exactly, and why you said it's Wada's favorite game?
Yeah. Harvest Moon. Well, first of all, I'll talk about, I actually bought this game too. I don't know what it is. I kept you know, finding myself like in possession of these Harvest Moon things, like kind of on accident, and I don't know why. So anyway, I bought this game, and the story that this one tells is kind of your entire life. Basically, you start off, it's divided into six chapters, and so the first chapter you kind of choose who you want to marry. The second chapter you have your kid. You decide which way you want to raise your kid, and your kid can grow up to be a goddamn brat. Actually, there's actually a scene where you can actually, you actually can hit your kid.
Wow,
I'm not even kidding.
Is there like a golf swing meter attached to that?
No.
Okay, I would hope not.
But I guess that's kind of the point is to kind of tell a story. Like one of the characters like is like an alcoholic and like has alcohol problems.
Wow.
You know what I mean? I mean,
is this a T for teen game? I'm just wondering like how they wrote around this stuff.
I don't think they try to, and I think that was the aim, was to kind of make it more lifelike than just raising crops, which again maybe would turn some people off. But
like, I knew there was a drunk in Back to Nature. It was never like, this guy's a drunk, but he was clearly a drunk, right, just based on his actions and his words and, you know, how he's always hanging around the winery.
So, the goal is to find a life partner and to, like, have a kid, kind of raise that kid, decide how you want to raise that kid. And all these things happen through the different chapters of the game. So if I'm not mistaken, there's actually stuff you can kind of miss in this game, if I'm not mistaken.
Hmm. Sounds right.
Yeah.
So at the very end of the game, like your kid has finally decided what they want to do. And then there's this last cutscene, and you actually end up dying at the very end of the game.
Wow.
And so I think Wada really wanted to tell a story from, like, not birth, but from, you know, a young man to an old man, you know, and passing away, and kind of how those, you know, how you pass on what you create. You know, you've created this new life in the world, and just because you pass on, kind of, you are still remembered through your progeny, mm-hmm. I suppose.
It actually reminds me of, I'm sure everyone's thinking of this now if you listen to our show, but Dragon Quest V has the same idea. Yeah. Although you don't go, you're not an old man in that game, but it sort of takes off from your child, when you're born.
Yeah.
In that game, so
that's one of my favorite Dragon Quest games, actually. So
I like the idea, and it's one that is not done often, because like video games are sort of like always meant to empower you or like give you fantasies, and being an old person is not like something that like a lot of people are looking forward to. I know I'm not, but it sounds awesome. And I mean, can you give any can you talk about whether or not like how is the sim stuff in this game? Is it sort of pushed the way to the side, or is it still like a major focus, like the farming, the raising of the animals, the all of that stuff?
I mean, you still do all that stuff, but like I said, it's there's certain, like, if you don't have like a certain heart rating with certain female characters, like the game will end there, like in the first chapter or something like that. So
it's you did not meet a woman.
No, exactly.
You will never pass on your seed.
Right, exactly.
It's not what I need to hear.
Jeez, I don't think it's what any of us need to hear.
No,
I mean, come on, I hear that enough from my parents. So yeah. Let's.
So I don't know. It's a different, and the game he just released, Hometown Story, was kind of a take on that as well, where he wanted to tell a story which was not just about like. You know, you farming something or doing something. He wanted to tell a story which was related to, you know, everybody in the village, I suppose. And I suppose that's what A Wonderful Life was. Like, you got to know the characters in the village, you know, more and more, rather than the focus on the farming and what have you asked.
But that, I mean, from the very beginning, that seemed to be what he wanted to focus on, like your relationships, period.
Yes.
And the farming was just a way to make that, make it so they didn't have to make new content for every in-game day, you know? I guess they found ways around that, and when that was easier to, you know, dial back, the story took precedence and the narrative took precedence.
Yeah, well, like I said, I mean, people don't usually, I mean, they're kind of like the min-maxers who are like, you know, how do I grow the crops and stuff like that. And
I got a platinum shovel on day 5.
Yeah, exactly. But most people are like, oh my God, you know, this guy's so dreamy. He won't talk to me. You know, how do I get him to talk to me? Sure. What do I give him? So, I mean, I think that is what makes Harvest Moon successful, is the kind of marriage aspect and relationship aspect, more so than the farming.
Right.
Because you could make a farming, people have made farming games. I mean, that, you know, there was the whole Farmville thing. I mean,
is that still happening?
Yeah, that's my point. Okay. I mean, you couldn't get married in that game. You know what I mean? I mean, it was basically just farming, and at the end of the day, that can get kind of boring.
Right, yeah, you need something to, something more.
Well, it's the same kind of thing that happened in SimCity. Like, I think, one of the reasons I love the Super Nintendo one was you were kind of the mayor, and you were kind of, like, you got rewarded. It really did feel like you were running your own city.
Yeah, there was more of a personal connection. Yeah, and like your little assistant with the crazy hair running around shot at.
Yeah, it's like it went on forever, and it could, but you were also being rewarded at certain points or being notified of things that you had to take care of in a way that felt like you were working towards something.
They were sort of like proto achievements almost, like grafted onto the original game.
Yeah. Oh, now it's a city. Now it's a metropolis.
Here's some new music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you have anything else to add about Wonderful Life?
I mean, just that I think it was the culmination of what he wanted to do. I mean, there are other games he worked on in the series, but I think for Yasuhiro Wada, I think that was kind of the ultimate game he wanted to make when he first set out to create Harvest Moon. Obviously, the technology wasn't there. It's kind of like the George Lucas thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he wanted, you know.
Right.
You know.
That makes sense. So, I remember sort of being interested in it more than any other just because, you know, the graphics looked a lot better than Save the Homeland. And from the sound of it, yeah, it seemed like it would be a more interesting game for me anyway.
Yeah, I might actually try finding this. I'm sure it might not be too hard to find. I don't know if Adam can comment on that.
Oh, God, I lose track of things because there's things we have. We're trying to get onto certain shops and I don't.
Yeah. Believe well, you can't get GameCube games anymore.
Yeah, no.
That sucks. But there was a PS2 version of this, right? I'm sure you could sneak that onto PSN.
There was a special edition released for PlayStation 2, I believe a year later.
Mm-hmm.
And you can marry a certain character that you couldn't marry.
if you put that on PSN, you'll get at least one sale from me.
I think so. So, I mean, obviously, like you said about Save the Homeland, I think there's a certain personality who will, because we get a lot of calls about this. I would say this, the calls I get the most are either the most recent games or Wonderful Life.
Hmm. Weird. So you actually literally get phone calls?
Yeah.
Wow.
No. I take all the phone calls.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean,
it's possible you've heard Adam's voice before if you listen to this podcast.
If you want to talk to me, give me a call at Natsume. I'll be there.
You're the Natsume counselor?
Pretty much. Wow.
Operators are standing by. Some closing questions, and I'll throw a few out there. Okay, so basically I just want to talk about Harvest Moon's legacy and like where it fits into the gaming world. And from where I sit, I think like Harvest Moon obviously did not inspire The Sims or Animal Crossing. Like these ideas would have eventually happened. Yeah. Increases in technology have sort of, you know, enabled people to recreate the mundane, as it were. That's what basically this game is, very much a recreation of, like, mundane daily life. But I feel like this game, sort of more than the other games, made it a lot more goal focused, like we talked about earlier, and that's really what I want to see. And I feel like there is still room for games like Harvest Moon, and I mean Harvest Moon is obviously still continuing even in the absence of its founder, who he's only a supervisor, is that correct, now on the series, or has he completely, like,
he is at Toybox, that is his company now.
Gotcha. I wasn't sure if he had any involvement at all.
I don't believe so.
But, like, above all, I want it to have space in the gaming world because it is a very friendly game that is not about revenge. It's about, like, the importance of relationships, the importance of, like, being a nurturing human being, like, why animals are great friends. It just, like, I'm sorry if I'm coming off as sappy or, you know, goody-goody, but I this is, like, there are so few games that aren't like, sneering and cynical and, like, for angry teens, and this is, like, such a great, like, antidote to the typical, like, anger and revenge and, you know, hatred that is usually spewing from video games.
We get so many calls that are basically what you said. And actually, the SRB, because a lot of times people will, you know, talk about only, like, you know, Call of Duty or whatever. And ESRB is one of the ESRB uses Harvest Moon as one of the titles as, you know, this isn't just blood and violence in games.
Right. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, for sure.
You do get the one alcohol reference, though, right?
Not the SRB, the ESA.
Oh, okay, ESA, got it.
Yeah.
Ray, how about you? What do you think about the legacy of Harvest Moon and, like, sort of where you think it belongs, or if it still belongs? Is there, like, a space? I'm surprised there hasn't been a mobile version of this game, or maybe there has been. I just have not been aware of it.
I'm sure there has in Japan somewhere obscurely.
Yeah.
Well, let me start by saying that I only ever bought one Harvest Moon game, and that was Harvest Moon GB, like not even the Game Boy Color version, but the original Game Boy version, which is pretty heavily based on the Super NES game. And, you know, it didn't end up grabbing me that much. Sort of like, it was sort of the same thing with Animal Crossing. It's like, for me, it just reaches a plateau at some point, and I couldn't really get it. Although, of course, I do recognize that the later games have made, you know, relative leaps and bounds. And it is really cool to see Harvest Moon still going in some respects. And that really speaks to the impact it made, however big or small it was back then.
Yeah, and like the reason...
still sticks around and has a really good, dedicated audience, you know, and it just keeps appealing to people.
And we didn't talk about every Harvest Moon game because there are just so many of them.
I think there's 20 something at this point.
Right, yeah. There's a lot, so yeah.
I think I'd like to ask you guys, like... what is the best Harvest Moon to play for someone like me who may be listening to this and still wants to try it again? And I do mean like vanilla Harvest Moon, not Rune Factory or anything else.
Are you still thinking, Adam? Because I have an answer. At least my preference would be, I would say start with the Friends of Mineral Town. It is like sort of the best kind of form of that Harvest Moon, you know,
sure.
The 80% sim focused, 20% like story focused, where
yeah.
it's all pretty easy to figure out. I mean, and
the thing that always bugged me was all the running back and forth and doing things every day in that game. And it's just like, well, I hear about the harvest sprites. It's like, okay, well, that sounds a little bit better.
Yeah.
If there are more things like that in later games. And,
I think it makes it as easy as it can be.
Sure.
And there's still going to be tedium in there, but like it is sort of like the best, most efficient use of your time. Like it doesn't like it respects your time at least more than the previous games
yeah,
did.
Okay.
I don't know, Adam, what do you think?
I actually I would recommend for a beginner is actually Harvest Moon and El Parade, which was a Wii game.
Okay.
Oh, I actually played a bit of that. I did enjoy it.
Yeah, it is kind of like, it doesn't throw you in the deep end, so to speak. So you're like some of the console games, which are my favorites because they are, like I said, kind of the, you know, dig 500 floors to find the secret, you know.
Oh, yeah, the mines. We didn't even talk about that.
Oh, that's my favorite thing is mining. Oh, my God.
Yeah, Jeremy, that is like the roguelike element of Harvest Moon.
It is so fun.
Oh, wow.
So, I don't know if Gary's even so yet. Would you? Okay, so actually, I was going to ask, what Harvest Moon would you recommend to someone like me who is a bad person?
Who's a bad person? Oh, probably Sunshine Islands, because, like I said, it is.
You play a butcher.
Yeah. No. I think it might suit the more hardcore gamer. This one, because you start off with like one island and you get these thing called sunstones from like harvest sprites, or you find them different places and you like raise the islands from the ocean.
Oh, sounds like Dragon Quest VII.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
It does.
No, so it's, and there's like a volcano island, a mushroom island where they're all mushrooms. I really, really like that game. Like I would still play that game. The mine is really deep. The cooking system is insane. Like there's a million recipes. I think to me, I enjoyed that as far as hardcore gaming, but I think it went way too hard in the hardcore gaming. But like I said, for Ray, I would recommend Harvest Moon and Animal Parade because it's, like I said, doesn't throw you in the deep end. You have a kind of mayor who kind of guides you. And he's like, you should probably do this next.
I see.
You know what I mean? Right.
I think you can also keep track of people where they are in the town.
Yes. Yeah, you can
is
actually.
What I liked
tracking,
about it.
You can stalk them.
It's like you just have to plant chip on them. And
okay. Yeah.
Should have told me that up front.
Now I'm in.
Yeah. And I actually like the graphics in that one kind of the best. I think they're kind of cute and Japanese-y enough for you.
Good depiction of ducks.
Yeah.
But. And Sunshine Islands, is that on DS?
Sunshine Islands is on DS, yes.
Okay.
Cool.
But so, I wouldn't recommend that for you start out.
Just making sure.
That's for pro harvesters.
Actually, I forgot. I did also buy Innocent Life, which was, you know, one of the spin-offs alongside with Rune Factory, but it did not continue as Rune Factory did. But I wanted to get into that more. Just, I don't know, maybe just because of the art style as well. And I like Arte Piazza's games.
That game didn't do that well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it is interesting to see, you know, those two spinoffs sort of go in one direction and the other did not.
Yeah.
Well, I think they were trying something new with both of those.
Yeah.
Like, but again, I think one of the things that turned people off of Innocent Life was the fact that you were a robot that couldn't get married.
Yeah.
And, you know,
right.
That kind of takes away, you know, half of the reason people buy the game in the first place.
Yeah.
That game has its fans, though. It has its fans.
So we never got back to Jeremy on Harvest Moon's legacy and its sort of place in the world. Jeremy, do you have any thoughts about that?
I do have one question before we move on to that topic. I'm looking at a list of Harvest Moon games, which is expansive. Adam, can you tell me what exactly makes Harvest Moon DS cute? So cute?
You play as a girl?
That's it? Okay.
Yeah. So this is actually I actually bought Harvest Moon DS when it was still Konami because we were working on the game Brooktown High. Do you guys remember that game?
Yeah, I do. I remember that one.
I was looking for inspiration about what makes a good dating sim. And I said, this is what I want in our game. And it didn't turn out that way, Brooktown High. But and again, like I said, I kept and not long after this, I actually ended up working for Natsume. So again, I like I said, I kept running into Harvest Moon all throughout my gaming life. Harvest Moon DS was the original DS version. Harvest Moon DS Cute was the girl version.
Mm-hmm.
So you play as a girl, and that's why it's cute.
Okay.
Okay.
Question answered. Yeah, but Jeremy, what do you feel about...
That was a heartbreaking answer, but thank you.
I wasn't responsible for the name.
I wasn't blaming you, Adam. It's okay.
I think I joined the company right after that, actually. It was released.
So, Jeremy, Harvest Moon's Legacy, please share your thoughts.
We kind of touched on it. You know, you mentioned games like SimCity and Animal Crossing, and apparently Brooktown High. there are a lot of games that have kind of covered the same territory, the same ground as Harvest Moon in the year since it debuted, and even if they weren't necessarily directly inspired by the game, even if they would have happened... in due time, just, you know, given the nature of video game development, I do think that the game's existence has helped influence a lot of similar games. I can't imagine that games like Giftpia and Animal Crossing weren't in some way, like, that those creators of those games, Skip and Nintendo and so forth, didn't look at Harvest Moon and take notes and say, wow, this is how you can create a video game that isn't violent, that's accessible, that's not too simulation-y in sort of the God game sense, you know, that's approachable and is about human characters and about relationships. And the fact that ESA holds it up as kind of a paragon of, hey, here's what video games can be like if you're not shooting someone in the face. That's great. I mean, it means
you
that...
You can do that?
It shows the wealth of options available to video games, something that...
Exactly.
You know, the mainstream video game industry doesn't really like to explore because it's not insanely profitable, but the things, you know, the fact that games like this can exist sort of off in the niches and still have a pretty decent-sized and loyal audience, I think that's great.
Cool. So my final question is, what do we want to see in future games, or what would draw us more into the series if we aren't part of it? And I can answer this because I've been playing Rune Factory 4. I reviewed it for US Gamer, and I don't think it's as related to Harvest Moon as it once was. I don't even know if it still carries the title of Fantasy Harvest Moon.
No, it just did for that first one.
Okay, I thought so. But I mean... for me, at least, it sort of brought me back into Harvest Moon because, unfortunately, the developer just went under like a few weeks ago.
Neverland.
Neverland, yeah, who developed
the Lufia series. Not even a few weeks ago. It's been even more recent than that.
Okay, yeah, but I'm sure it'll be much longer when you finally hear this episode. But
right.
Basically, what happens in Harvest Moon, what happens in Rune Factory 4 is, I didn't play any of the other Rune Factories, but this game, there is such a concerted effort to make everything as efficient and speedy as possible. Like, the menus are fast, there's no loading, there are shortcuts everywhere. Like, they make a concerted effort, like, at every occasion to make the best use of your time as the player, and I totally appreciate that. You can carry so much stuff at you at once. And like in the game, there are so many systems and like little things to mess around with, but no one system is ever so developed that it's overwhelming or so developed that you don't immediately understand what is going on with it. Like, you can fish, you can cook, you can mine, you can raise monsters, you can make weapons, you can just do everything ever imaginable that you would want to do, but it's all really accessible and easy to do. So, not to draw attention away from Harvest Moon and Adam's company, but that is sort of like, I wholeheartedly recommend it, and it's an amazing game, and if you're interested in sort of understanding what makes this sort of idea so attractive, try it out. And you know what? If you don't like farming, you can fight things, too, which is what Rune Factory added.
Take that, ESA.
We could still kill. But listen to this. The things you kill aren't actually killed. They're just teleported away, according to the game story.
Forest of Beginnings.
Yeah, so even that, even fighting is nonviolent in Harvest Moon. So let's go around the table and then we get to Jeremy. Like, Ray, what would kind of draw you into Harvest Moon more, like, as someone who's not, like, super into it?
Yeah, gosh. I mean, like I said, I think more of that streamlining would help and sort of taking, not completely removing, but sort of easing that routine. Because, like I said, I didn't really like the running around back and forth so much. I mean, that's one of the big memories that I have. Is like, oh god.
Yeah, there's a lot of like running, like, and there's like a space in between the town and your farm. You're always like running back and forth between it. Yeah.
Yeah, but again, like I said, everything I've heard about the newer one seems to relieve that. And you know, maybe I should be playing more Rune Factory games as well. So yeah, I think just that sort of general streamlining of the daily tasks and keeping things, you know, a little bit easier while still making sure that you have to take care of things and keep your relationships in check and stuff like that. I mean, you know, not any huge changes, basically.
Right. So Jeremy, like, what would you like to see in a Harvest Moon? Like, what would actually get you interested in playing one as someone who plays a lot of games like Animal Crossing with the same sort of idea of like community and daily tasks and things like that?
You know, it's not the daily tasks that really appeals to me about Animal Crossing. It's the customization and the tremendous breadth of things you can do within that limited context. Like, I always feel like when I play Animal Crossing, there are the days where you just kind of do the same old thing and grind for money or whatever. But a lot of times you're doing something you haven't done before. And, you know, with the newest game, New Leaf, there's actually a lot of customization to the town that you can do. So, you know, for a while I was playing, and every day you get a couple of shrubs and a couple of trees and a couple of flowers that you can buy, and you can, you know, sort of shape the town, and it's sort of a long-term endeavor. And I was playing for like a month and just putting in like 10 or 15 minutes a day, just enough to do that little bit. And like, if you could combine that with something a little less real-time based and not make it so much of a waiting game, I think that could be pretty interesting. If a Harvest Moon game let you really, really do a lot of broad customization, I think I'd enjoy that.
The most recent one, New Beginning, actually does have a lot of those aspects. You can actually customize the town and your farm exactly how you want. You can move. You can even move the townspeople's.
Like, yeah, I like that part of it.
Yeah, yeah. And you can make them your hero of color for the first time.
Hmm. Yeah, it is. I only played a bit of it, maybe up to summer, I think. But I really like, you can just pick up buildings. Like, I want this building to be closer to my farm, so I don't have to run to go to it. So that's like the next step, I think, for Harvest Moon. There hasn't been another game after that, has there?
No, not yet.
And are there any in the works? I mean, that have been announced?
I know of the two 3DS Harvest Moon games, there was one that was really well received and one that wasn't. Which one of those is a New Beginning?
The most recent one.
And I think it was received well.
Is that the one that people liked?
Very well.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Because I know the first one on 3DS, maybe people were like, meh.
That was probably Tale of Two Towns.
Yeah, I actually really like that game. But that's just me.
But you like Tolstoy, right?
I can't trust you.
No, maybe
you are biased, as they say. Sorry.
I just like the whole. There's to go into it very, very briefly. There's like two towns, and one of them's kind of Asian themed, and one of them's kind of European themed, and I kind of like the the kind of differences that you would go to one town, it would be kind of like Japan and or Pan-Asian, I suppose, is the best way. And you would go to the other town, it would be like European and people are wearing funny hats, you know, and so
sushi versus schnitzel.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
And then the great war between the towns and instantly.
Yeah.
But that's it for Harvest Moon. I want to thank Adam for coming down and giving us lots of money and yes. supporting the show. And I hope your girlfriend will forgive you and forgive us after she hears this amazing episode.
Oh, no, she's forgiven. Like I said, this is, you know, you have your monthly budget meeting and she's right. just like, what is this charge for $300? And I'm like, I can explain.
It's the feed a hungry Bob.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. So to wrap up, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and SoundCloud, and Twitch.tv as Retronauts. Please join our social networks. We have lots of announcements for you guys. It's the best way to find out when shows are launching, when we're doing live streams, when your merchandise is coming, everything you need to know. Just search for Retronauts on all those social networks, and you'll find us. Do not be fooled by imposters. And also, please be sure to go to our blog for all kinds of info on the songs we use, links to, you know, things related to the topic. Just go to retronauts.com. Like I said in the past, each episode has its own blog post, and feel free to comment because we usually will talk back to you as long as you say nice things. And please keep the reviews coming. They've been really helping the show, and everyone we get helps us, you know, be visible to more people. So if you haven't reviewed the show, please do. It helps us a lot. So let's give out contact info. I'll start. I am Bob Servo on Twitter. How about you, Jeremy? Where can we find you?
I'm GameSpite on Twitter. I have a blog at 2-dimensions.com, and my day job is usgamer.net.
Sweet. How about you, Ray?
Well, I guess most of the time I'm just on Retronauts.
I can find you in this room.
Yeah, but I do my Game History Magazine scroll, and I'm still working on one for the new year, so look forward to that, I guess. Scroll.vg.
And Adam, where are you and who and, are you?
Oh, yeah, my Twitter. Should I do that?
Oh, yeah, go for it. Sorry.
Okay, sorry. RDB, AAA.
Yay.
So you can find me on Twitter at Vegalta _ Gaijin.
You might need to spell that.
VEGALTA _ Gaijin. Gaijin is spelled G A I J I N. I can't talk usually so much about gaming stuff.
Right, yeah.
So
we understand.
Usually I talk about Japanese soccer and other stuff. So if you get really bored, I'm not going to be offended by it.
Or if you need info on Harvest Moon Honeys, turn to Adam, right?
Yeah.
Right. Or is that company? Are those company secrets?
You know, I can be bribed.
Okay, nice. So
and Vegalta is a character from Dragon Ball, right?
No, that's Vegeta.
He's a character from Dragon Ball.
No, Vegalta is actually the name of the soccer team in Sendai. Never mind, anyway.
So, on that confusing note, we'll see you guys next week with a brand new episode of Retronauts Pocket. Thanks again for joining us. Later.